Do you lock your doors at night at home? Kind of funny question these days, right? Who doesn't lock their doors? Do you lock them every night or just every other night or when you think of it? When our daughter comes to visit us, she'll still do it. We're getting ready to go to bed, and she'll say, "Dad, have you locked the doors?" And I'm just sorely tempted to say, no, I didn't lock the doors. As a matter of fact, I left a sign out there saying, "Burglars welcome. Come on in. Help yourself." Yes, of course I locked the doors. I never forget to lock the doors of our house. I know the chances of being broken in are very, 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 very small. But you never know. You never know. Here in the Gospel of John, we are treated to three stories about the resurrection, or three different encounters with the risen Lord here in John 20. And John 20, chapter 19, sets the tone of things. The disciples are hiding behind locked doors. Why are they hiding behind locked doors? It says, because of fear. The fear of who? The fear of what? The fear of the Jews. The Bible makes two very clear points here, that the disciples react to Jesus' crucifixion with fear, cowering behind locked doors. And then this, that Jesus seeks out those fearful disciples after his resurrection. He appears to them and he empowers them to do his work. That's what we've got. So let's think about locks today and locked doors. Have you ever been to somebody's house who lives in the inner city, maybe in a house or in an apartment, or maybe you've seen it on TV, somebody who lives in a rough neighborhood, and you've seen their door? They have not just the lock on the door. They have a clasp and a deadbolt and another hasp up there, a whole multitude of locks on that door, right? And when somebody comes to the door and that person wants to let them in because they know who they are, there's this click, click, click. First this deadbolt, first this bolt, then this hasp, then this lock, and finally a fumbling with the doorknob to let somebody in. And of course, when you think about it, not only does that person have to do that to let somebody in, they've got to go through all that to let themselves out too. A man who owns a security business said that his sales skyrocketed after the September 11th attacks on the United States, which he said was rather strange because his lock business was, you know, locks and deadbolts and security alarms and things like that. But it seemed that after September 11th, everybody seemed to need extra locks and bolts and alarm systems. And this man said, of course, none of this offers security against terrorists, especially when he's blowing up the whole building, right? But for some reason, the terrorists put people in the mood for more security. The Bible says the disciples were hiding behind locked doors. Perhaps you've put in a set of deadbolts in your house, you know, in your outside door, and you were so proud of yourself and you're so happy until you heard a professional on TV, a police professional, say, "Well, you know, unfortunately, those locks are mainly for you, not a potential thief. Any serious thief has lots of ways around those locks. It makes you feel better? Fine. But they don't do the trick." The disciples were behind locked doors. Locks come in all shapes and sizes, you know. And we're not just talking about the ones you find at the hardware store. There's other locks. It's quite natural when we have suffered something very badly, when somebody has hurt our feelings, or when somebody's told us that they no longer love us anymore, or we've had a relationship gone sour, or some kind of thing where we've disconnected with people. What's our first reaction? Yeah, you know. You want to lock down emotionally and mentally and just withdraw from people and put up a barrier and protect yourself and say, I was hurt. I'm going to withdraw, lock myself away emotionally because I don't want to be hurt again. That's something we worry about in people in our family who've suffered some kind of emotional, spiritual, tender injury like this. We worry about them, that they just might close the door, click the lock. If you can't have love or something like that, at least you have some security from the pain. You remember that song Simon and Garfunkel sang? You know, I am a rock, I am an island. It's expressing that kind of human tendency to withdraw. And it says stuff like, I won't disturb the slumber of feelings that have died. If I'd never loved, I never would have cried. And hiding in my room, safe within my room, I touch no one and no one touches me. I am a rock. I am an island. A teacher in an inner city school said that her greatest challenge as a teacher, day after day, was looking into the eyes of her high school students and seeing young people who had simply shut down. They had failed so often, they had the door slammed in their face so often that they had withdrawn. They mentally and emotionally locked the door and throw away the key. And the teacher said, my whole teaching is involved in desperately searching for some key that can unlock that mind and give me some entrance into their souls. Here on this second Sunday of Easter, we are our gospel tells us about a group of people who are locked, cowering behind closed doors. But this isn't just any group. These are the close friends of Jesus that he had when he had his ministry going on. It is night. It's a dangerous time in any city, but especially in Jerusalem, after the violent weekend and all the terrible things that have been done to Jesus. It's a dangerous time indeed, and his friends have reasons to fear their enemies. You know, maybe they also fear their friends and their family and the scorn and the ridicule that they're probably heaping on them at this time. Here they were the ones who believed that Jesus was the Messiah, the Redeemer, a very special man. Even some of them came to understand that here was the Son of God. What were their family members saying to them now? Ha! You guys were really right about him, weren't you? Where's your Messiah? Oh, I think he's dead. Where, some Lord and Savior in the grave? I bet they feared their friends. We fear mockery. We fear ridicule. So they locked the doors against everyone so they wouldn't suffer. You know, perhaps our college students know this kind of fear as they move about the campus where they're attending school. There's probably plenty of people out there who do not share their Christian commitment. They don't see the world as we see it. In fact, they think that Christianity is downright silly, and some of them are very clear in saying so. How can you believe something that ridiculous? Well, after a few encounters with people like that, maybe our college students are inclined to say, well, gee, I just won't risk the ridicule. I just won't risk the mockery or the arguments or the criticism or whatever it might be. Better to stay behind closed doors. Better just not to mention that I love Jesus. That's the easy way. But it's a click, click, click. A church can get all excited about evangelism. They realize that they've lost touch with their neighborhood. They realize that declining membership is a problem. So they do some evangelistic training, and then on the appointed Sunday afternoon, they head out into the neighborhoods to knock on doors, to speak to people, to leave them some literature, to tell them about their church, and invite them, ask them to come. That's a good thing to do, isn't it? Well, don't you know that there's been many a church that has done that and many a church member who have had doors slammed in their faces because people don't want to be bothered on a Sunday afternoon. People are not too happy about that. And you know what's happened to many of us in many churches? We've experienced that kind of thing, and so the evangelism effort just kind of eases on down to where we just don't do it anymore. That kind of thing doesn't last too long. And what we've seen in the slamming doors is like we have a reaction to that, not want to experience that, so we go click, click, click. And we just don't try to reach out in the name of Christ. And in doing so, we've ended up closing our doors to other people. You see, this story about Jesus' disciples is not a story about the ways that the world has locked its doors against the claims of the Christian faith, as much as it is a story about how we as Christians lock our doors. Who's got the doors locked here in this story? Huh? And it's ironic that in locking our doors out of fear of the world, we end up locking our doors to Jesus and how He might help us. Really, in John, the 20th chapter, we get the idea that it's not so much the soldiers of Caesar who are trying to get to the disciples as much as it is Jesus trying to get to His disciples in order to bless them, in order to give them peace, in order to forgive them, and in order to empower them. That's what Christ is trying to do. Now, can Jesus pull off something like that? Can He get through those locked doors? Maybe you've heard about Harry Houdini. Harry Houdini is among the most famous escape artists that has ever been. He lived in the early part of the 1900s. In 32 years as a magician, Harry Houdini escaped from 2,000 locked trunks that were submerged in water. He picked another 8,500 locks and escaped. He also freed himself from 13,000 straitjackets. He was an amazing man. And old dopey me, I can't even open a package of nabs without pulling out my pocket knife and having to slice that rascal open. But Houdini was an escape artist, if there ever was one. You may also know that Houdini was also fascinated with the spiritualist movement that was very popular in his day and time. And there were a whole lot of people that were going around and saying, we can contact the dead. We can have dead people speak to us and communicate and do this and do that. Houdini was fascinated with that. But he engaged a lot of these spiritualists. He tested them. He proved a whole lot of them to be frauds. He says, I know your tricks. This is what you're doing. You're just pulling the wool over people's eyes. He never got proof from anybody that anybody could contact the dead. You may also know what else Houdini did. He had an arrangement, an understanding with his wife, Bess, that if he should die first, he would make every effort he possibly could to try to communicate with his wife, Bess, to let him know that it was him. They came up with a series of codes of, if these things happened in this way, then you know that's me communicating to you from beyond. Did you know that Houdini's wife, every year after his death, would conduct a seance, would try to contact Harry Houdini? He died in 1926. Every year, she held this seance, and after 10 years, she just gave up, because Houdini did not show up. So death was one thing that Houdini could not escape. But how about Jesus? Well, He pulled it off, didn't He? And if by the power of God, this Jesus can not only send His friends a little message, you know, but He can show up in person and say, I'm here. If He can do that, He could just bust into the room anytime, any place. Well, maybe, just maybe, He can bust into your life anytime, any place. Surprise you. But this is the real good news of Easter. Just as the death of Jesus could not hold Him in the tomb, our various locks that we have can't keep Him out either. Can't keep Him from getting to us. Somehow, some way, He's going to get through our locked doors, no matter what they are. Whether it's mental, emotional, or spiritual. He comes to us and He shows us His wounds and He shows us His scars and He says, hey, this is for you. And hey, here's some peace. Just take it. It's yours. Death couldn't lock Christ away, and Christ cannot be locked away from His people. I call that good news. Now, I suspect that you and I don't try to lock Jesus out, not intentionally anyway. We're not meaning to do that, but we're really locking him out whenever we stay away from church, whenever we avoid being part of Bible study, whenever we avoid opening up our Bibles and we find a whole lot of other things to do, or whether we when we don't pray and fill the time with other things, we're really locking Jesus out, aren't we? Oh, I didn't mean to. Oh, I didn't know I was doing that. Every time we finally tuck our faith away so that others don't see it, hey, we're doing the same thing. That's what we're doing, locking him out. Now, you might expect me to be right at this point and be telling you, okay, unlock your door. Throw open wide the portals of your heart. Let Jesus come into your life. Well, I'm just going to give you God's promise as it comes to us from the Bible today. Some good news. What is it? Just as the risen Christ was not stumped or foiled by those locked doors long time ago that the disciples were hiding behind, so also the risen Christ is not going to be foiled by any locks that you have put on your doors. God is resourceful. God is imaginative. God is persistent. God is determined to have us. Even in our lostness, even in our betrayals, even in the ways we've let him down, boy, he wants us. And he's going to do everything within his power to reach us. Now, who knows when? Who knows how? Who knows where? But he can do it. And he will do it. Here in this service, here at this church, as you go forth in your daily life and living, he's coming. He's out to get you. There's no defense against Jesus. There's no way to be secure against him. He is coming. How did we begin the service today? Pat read to us from Revelation where Jesus says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." What door? What door? It's your door. You hear him knocking? Well, hey, you want to let him in?